Exploring the importance of having the right skills to succeed, this is Skillfully Speaking, supported by Babcock International, presented by Skills Ambassador Jackie Grubb.
Welcome to Skillfully Speaking. I'm Jackie Grubb, and I am thrilled to engage in conversation today with someone truly remarkable. This individual has made a significant impact on education, social justice, and community development. I'm delighted to introduce Robert Helfen, Minister for Skills, Apprenticeships, and Higher Education. Welcome, Robert.
Hello, thank you for having me on.
Welcome. Just reflecting on your earlier influences and development, can you give your early education and experiences on how you think that your background has actually shaped your views in the importance of skills development?
My father came here as an immigrant to this country, and he came here with nothing when he was about 15, 16 years old. And he was determined to work hard. He sent me to a private school, and I'm very proud of that. And then I went to university. Those were the predominant options available then. I mean, there wasn't the apprenticeship scale that we have today. But what has really shaped me and transformed my views about skills over many, many years has been my constituency of Harlow. And if I'm able just to tell you a brief story of what happened to me, it was either 2008 or 2009. I wasn't even a member of parliament. I was just a parliamentary candidate. I went into a building. It was a grim building made of concrete to meet some young people from Catch 22 and the Prince's Trust. Those are two charities that look after young people with disadvantages. I remember being in this room and the young people telling me they were desperate to do apprenticeships, but there were no opportunities. And even if they were offered an interview, one of them was told to go all the way to Yorkshire. And I don't know what it was, but I walked out of that building. It really transformed my whole view about skills and apprenticeships. And I thought to myself that if I get elected in whenever the election would be, I would do everything possible in my political life to champion apprenticeships and skills, literally. And I kept that promise. And my first ever speech in Parliament, my maiden speech in 2010, was about transforming careers education in schools to encourage more students to do apprenticeships in technical and vocational education. And I've done, as a backbencher and as a frontbench, as a minister, I've done everything possible to champion apprenticeships and skills. And what's been a huge influence is not just that episode, which I mentioned, but also Harlow College, which, of course, City College Plymouth is a wonderful place, but I'm very proud of my own college. And I've visited my own constituency college over 100 times since I've been a member of parliament. And when you see what goes on in there, how they transform the lives of everyone, disadvantaged students to those with all kinds of backgrounds, how they get them on the skills ladder of opportunity and what they're doing to build our schools. And I've seen that in colleges all over the country. It really gave me an understanding about how important skills and apprenticeships are and why I'm determined to build an apprenticeship and skills nation.
That's brilliant. And, you know, this is flying the flag for all colleges. You know, colleges, further education colleges, are anchor institution for skills that serve their communities, make a difference to people's lives and bridge those skills gap. But it's so obvious that you have such a huge commitment to education. And this has been evident in the whole of your political career. So how do you believe a strong educational foundation actually contributes to the development of essential skills in individuals?
One term I always hate, by the way, is the term soft skills.
Yeah.
Because I don't believe any skills are soft. Skills are incredibly hard. You need both skills and knowledge. And we always had this false argument in our country about knowledge and skills. And I've always said you need to absolutely learn the names of fish. You need to learn the biology of fish and nature, but you also need to teach people how to fish. So what I've always believed is marrying both knowledge and skills, which is very much part of my philosophy. And to me, education and skills is everything because it can solve so many problems. If you are given a good education, it means you can get on the ladder of opportunity. It means you have both the knowledge and the skills to do further training, but also to get jobs. And if you get a job, you mean you get security, prosperity for yourself and your family. So there's nothing better. To me, education is the greatest tool for social justice that we have. There's nothing more important. And that's why FE colleges are so important. They're not just places of skills capital, they're places of social capital as well. And you're absolutely right to say that they are community assets. because where they are, they're absolutely fundamental to the community. And where you have good FE colleges, you always note that that community is stronger and actually unemployment is less in those areas. And because the young people are being given, even in difficult economic times, the training and skills that employers need.
And I think we all have, including myself, a civic responsibility for equity and developing people to their full potential, you know, whatever their background or whatever their lives are. And your advocacy for social justice is integral to your political career. But how do you see skills development as a means to bridge social inequalities and create a more inclusive society?
I keep mentioning the ladder of opportunity, and I've already brought it up a few times in answer to your questions. It's not just three words soundbite. Every rung of the ladder has real policy to it. And of course, every ladder has two pillars. On one side, it's strengthening FE and HE. And on the other, it is social justice and opportunities, because I believe it's integral. And I go back to my original answer to you about those young people I met way back in 2008. So what I've tried to do as a minister this time around is to ensure that where possible, disadvantaged people can benefit from doing apprenticeships, for example. So we've increased the care leavers bursary from £1,000 to £3,000 because there are not enough care leavers taking up apprenticeship opportunities. I was born with a walking disability myself. Originally, I was told I would never be able to walk. And here I am talking to you as a MP and a minister, thanks to Great Ormond Street Hospital and other great doctors. But I'm determined to ensure that more apprentices who have disabilities or other special educational needs also take up apprenticeships. So we've started a mentoring scheme. It's in pilot phase at the moment to try and ensure that we give the support and encouragement to apprentices who have those kind of difficulties in life. There's a lot of money that goes to employers if they have a apprentice with a disability, if they need that money. There is money that goes to providers as well. And I'm absolutely determined to support that. And separately, of course, there's the money that goes to FE colleges. The bursary fund, I think, is £160 million. And that is really important as well to ensure that disadvantaged students can benefit from an FE education. We've also trying to ensure that disadvantaged apprentices benefit to do degree apprenticeships. So we've increased the money for that to £40 million from £8 million to £40 million over the next couple of years. But it isn't just about money. It's got to be about culture change and evangelizing about apprenticeships and ensuring that employers absolutely understand and welcome apprenticeships from all backgrounds, because we know that those apprenticeships, all the stats show, are very successful, are very loyal to the companies that have trained them, and usually stay rather than doing their training and go off somewhere else. So it's absolutely no brainer. It's good for the apprentice and it's good for the business as well.
And do you know what? I agree with you totally in terms of the phrase softer skills, but I haven't come up with a different version of what that might be. I don't know whether you have, but when people talk about the softer skills, which they're definitely not softer skills, they're essential to be able to get into jobs and, you know, high value jobs and things like that. But resilience, communication, teamwork are just as important as actually getting the qualification to go into work. And you briefly talked about health and well-being. And do you have a view about the health and well-being space? Because, you know, mental health is an issue. And without our health, to be able to perform, to be able to achieve, to be able to be successful is really, really important. So how do you keep yourself healthy? And have you any views on how we can all keep ourselves healthy in this landscape?
Now, I'm also Minister for Higher Education as well as Minister for Skills. And I have to say that it's been one of the biggest issues in my H higher education inbox, mental health. And it's a huge, huge problem for many, many young people. And there are all kinds of reasons for this. I do think, look, I'm very modern. I love mobile tech and social media, but I definitely think that social media has been part of it. I remember being with some students who almost had like really anxious and anguished because they told me they couldn't get themselves off TikTok and things like that, literally looking me in the face as if really anguished, and they were on it all night and so on. And I know social media can be a force for good as well, but I do think it has enormous problems. The other point that you mentioned was really, you used the word resilience. I think we need to use that word more. I think we need to do as much as possible to help people with resilience. I remember going to this great college in Newham, Newham Sixth Form College, which has a more kind of academic traditional bent to the student, but they teach the students resilience. They have American baseball players come in to talk to the students. It was incredible. They do a kind of exam room type scenario so that students don't get frightened when they have to do exams. Here's a confession, which I know won't be too public, but I was terrible at exams as a child. I was mega stressed. I didn't enjoy them at all. I only got over it by the time I did my master's degree at university. But up until then, even my undergraduate degree, I was absolutely nervous and anxious, didn't sleep the night before, drinking too much coffee, you name it. I've learned over the years to deal with it. I think health is really important. Exercise, swimming, though I have problems with my legs, I try to do a lot of swimming, makes a massive difference. And also, I've sort of been on a diet for the last 2 years. I've lost about 3 stone overall. It goes up and down like a yo-yo, of course. But I think health, exercise, and being in the fresh air.
Yeah.
There's an amazing book that's come out by a journalist called Isabel Hardman, and she calls it The Natural Health Service. And it talks all about the outdoors and the benefits that that can bring to people's well-being and resilience. I absolutely believe in that. I think if you are in the outdoors, it makes a massive, massive difference to what you do.
What would you be saying to all of those students out there then? Because we all know that our brains work very differently. Some of us are really good at memorizing and taking exams and doing well, but actually others take a long time and their brains work differently in more of a practical way. So any advice for those, Robert?
Yes, I do think some exams are important. I'm not against exams. I do think that to have to test yourself, a quick memory recall is worth it, because you do have those kind of situations in life. I mean, as a minister, suddenly I'll be told I have to do a debate in the Commons. There might be very short notice. And, you know, you learn those skills growing up, those memory recalls. I do think that is important. People have to do that in all walks of life. But I'd say to students, you know, people do have different brains. I tend to be a better visual learner. Like when I'm talking to people, it goes in my head much, much more. That's why I love going on visits. I go around to colleges and universities almost every week.
Yeah.
And I learn so much. And it sticks in my head much more than all the 5 million forests they give me to read every day, basically, at paper. But it's not easy. You have to do these things, but you can only do your best. That's what I'd say to students. And we do have to do things like maths and English because they're so central to everything we do in life. But other than that, try and do the things that you love doing and that you're best at, because then you'll feel much more happy and contented. And, you know, if exams stress you out, they're still important, but I completely get it. But just get support from your friends and your family and try and do as much as possible. So as I say, specializing in the subjects that you enjoy the most. So I try to put all my energies in, surprise, surprise, history and politics and English literature and language. And although, of course, maths and English, maths particularly, which was my weakness, I think to this day is incredibly important.
Yeah.
If you want to build on your skills and get yourself on the right path to success, visit the City College Plymouth website, cityplym.ac.uk. You can hook up with courses, download information packs, guides, and much more. Or find us on social media. We're Skillfully Speak on X, Skillfully Speaking Podcast on Instagram, and Skillfully Speaking on Facebook and LinkedIn. Skillfully Speaking, where hidden skills are revealed. Now back to the conversation.
With skills, and in particular FE, you know, the options are limitless. You know, there is something for everybody, and developing people to their full potential in different flight paths is something that we do every day. So that balance of health and well-being, that balance of those communication resilience skills, coupled with maths and English and getting the qualification, is the power behind getting into those good jobs so that people can have a good standard of living and achieve and be successful. But if I can just sort of take us back to your daytime role, can you just share some more insights? I mean, you've touched on it already about shaping the national priorities and policies, about actually addressing the skills agenda as a member of parliamentary committees, particularly those relating to education and employment?
Yes, so previously, before being a minister, although this is my second stint as being the Minister for Apprenticeships and Skills, I was select committee chair, and as I said, it's a very different role from being a minister. As a select committee chair, you can campaign for change. As a minister, you can implement change. So there is a huge difference.
Yeah.
But I was able to campaign. So, for example, I campaigned for prisoners to be able to do apprenticeships. That has now come in. There's not enough doing them at the moment, but at least it's come in. And both the previous Justice Secretary, Dominic Raab, and the previous Education Secretary rang me up to tell me that they were going to do it, because I was bringing through amendments in Parliament and making a strong case in my select committee with my colleagues. And we also campaigned for more encounters, going back to my first ever speech in the House of Commons, to ensure that the government toughened up the law that schools would have more encounters with apprenticeship organisations or technical colleges. And that was agreed by the former Secretary of State, Nadeem Zahawi. So you can get change in select committee, you just have to campaign. But as a minister, you know, my priorities are to be able to implement and deliver. I want more apprenticeships. I want quality apprenticeships. I want to ensure there are more achievements in apprenticeships. It's gone up in the last few months by about over 20%, which is really good news, because it's not just about numbers going in. It's also about outcomes. Do people complete their apprenticeship? I want to make sure that we have the best, most prestigious skills system in the world. And with a T-level program, which I'm very passionate about, our higher technical qualifications. And we're working hard on careers advice, as I mentioned. I want FE colleges. I hate always, with every breath of my body, hated this term, the Cinderella sector. You know, it just drove me mad. And I reminded people that Cinderella became a member of the royal family. And we should banish the two ugly sisters of snobbery and underfunding. And I think our FE sector is incredible. I see the most remarkable colleges around the country. It was just over 60% good or outstanding in 2010. Over 92 or 93% of colleges are good or outstanding today. We've got our new Institute of Technology. So part one of my rungs of the ladder is, you know, strengthening FE and championing apprenticeships and skills. And I've done everything possible, even with the difficult economic constraints on funding, to try and get more funding through. There'll always be a need for more. I completely get it. But I think that our FE sector is going from strength to strength. And that's a tribute to all the principals, all the staff, all the support staff up and down our country.
Yep, an absolutely whole team approach. And you've definitely mentioned some real key highlights there. And, you know, I was delighted to go to Buckingham Palace last week and be presented a Queen's Anniversary Prize for my college from the Queen, which was totally humbling and a huge privilege on behalf of all of my organisation. But, you know, I wouldn't have been able to do that without, you know, my governors, the staff, the students, the stakeholders and the employers. And further education colleges are demand led by their employers, and large employers as well as small, medium enterprise and smaller employers are absolutely crucial in terms of us bridging the skills gap and making sure that we're delivering a curriculum that's actually fit for purpose. So in terms of collaborating with businesses and industries in your policy making involvement, how do you ensure that the alignment is between the skills agenda and the evolving demands of the job market?
Yeah, well, first of all, congratulations to you.
Thank you.
An amazing college. And I always say what makes it is not just the teaching staff, but particularly the support staff as well.
Yes, absolutely.
And I've loved that you do T-levels, that you do boot camps, that you do apprenticeships. And
Thank you.
Since 2010, well, there have been about 40,000 apprenticeship starts since 2010. And you've played a major part in that, your college. So huge tribute to you. Everything I want a college to do, you're doing it. So
thank you.
Going back to your premise of your question, it's really important, because if you look back pre-2010, there were apprenticeships were concentrated either on the traditional crafts or trades. Very important. But also there's some of them just lasted a few months. And what we decided to do since 2010, and it's a hard reform, it's a really hard reform, and it will take time to bed in even now, was to try and ensure that apprenticeship qualifications are not just high standard, high standard possible, but are led by employers. So the qualifications are designed by employers. The T-levels are designed by employers. The HTQs are designed by employers. The Institute of Technology, which, you know, obviously part of the Southwest Institute of Technology, that is backed by employers. And they're going to revolutionise tertiary education, by the way. I'm so excited about that. I love them. I absolutely love them. And doing the HCQ degree apprenticeships and the like.
Yeah.
And so everything we've done with the Institute for Apprenticeship and Technical Education, which, funny enough, I legislated for when I was previously a minister in 2016 to 17 in this role, everything that has been done has been to try and ensure that employers are in the driving seat. The reason for that is because if employers design the qualifications, they're more likely to give people jobs.
Yeah.
For National Apprenticeship Week, I travelled over 843 miles. I feel like the Proclaimers, although maybe 500. And what I saw was not just amazing colleges, but employers like, whether it was Airbus, who had designed qualifications or employing a huge number of apprentices, that was in Bristol, or whether it was the NHS in Cornwall, or whether it was a Dopstar in Devon, or Erwin Mitchell, lawyer's company in Cambridge, because I went this time from west to east. Last year, I did north to south.
Okay.
This year, I went all the way from Cornwall to Ipswich to Cambridge, back to Harlow, my constituency. And in every case, they were hiring apprentices because they'd helped sign the qualifications. And so it's a no-brainer.
Yeah.
To happen.
It absolutely is. And, you know, I'm really proud that every single one of our courses is actually signed off by an employer, and we give the why behind why we're delivering that course in the first place. So really delighted with that. So what is your concept of the skills gap, Robert?
My concept of the skills gap is, first of all, there are a lot of skills that employers need that we don't have enough people doing them. So it might be NHS, medical skills. It might be in STEM areas, whether it's engineering. We often have a skills gap with women, for example, and not enough women are doing STEM subjects, although I've seen incredible examples around the country where you do meet the most remarkable women doing these areas, but not enough of them. So we have to have these skills gaps because these are skills our country needs. So a skills gap is an absolute strategic skill that our country needs, and they're usually in STEM. They will be in AI and cybersecurity and some forms of digital, and also in public service like the NHS and medical. That's when you're talking about skills gaps. That's why we're doing everything possible to try and fill those skills gaps. And over half of apprenticeships now are in STEM subjects. I think we've got over 100 HTQs now, higher technical qualifications. Our T-level program is rolling forward. And we have incredible healthcare T-levels, as you know.
Yeah.
Incredible STEM T levels and also higher technical qualifications. So everything we're trying to do in the boot camps and the free level three course, everything we're trying to do is to try and ensure that we fill that skills gap so we give employers the skills that they need.
Yeah. And I'm in a privileged position of a land of opportunity in Plymouth, really, because, you know, having one of the biggest hospitals in Europe and a high degree of advanced manufacturing and maritime and construction and engineering, you know, this area absolutely lends itself to all the things that you've just been talking about. But I just wanted to go on to now of the subject of lifelong learning. And I'm an absolute ambassador of lifelong learning. I'm learning all the time. And I just wanted your view on recognising the importance of lifelong learning. How do you encourage the development of skills beyond formal education? And actually, in terms of some of the discussion that we've had, especially for those individuals that aren't in non-traditional career paths?
Well, there's a number of aspects to adult learning. I call it tailored learning or community learning. There is adult learning for jobs. Those are like the HTQs, the boot camps, the free level three courses, of which there are over 400 as well. And I absolutely believe in community learning. In my own area, Essex Council do an extraordinary job. They use the main library for an adult learning centre. And the reason why that is so important is because there are some people, especially those from particularly disadvantaged backgrounds, it's quite nervous even to get into an FE college, to go inside an FE college and do a course. It's quite a big step, let alone going to university. So I think community learning gets them on the first rung of that ladder. And then they might do a fuller FE course or whatever it might be. We are investing over £2 billion in it. I'm very supportive of it. And I've seen the advantage. By the way, not just you talked about mental health, it has a massive impact on people's mental health and well-being as well as their skills opportunities. If I can just mention the third strand of this, I've mentioned adult learning for jobs and adult learning for community learning or tailored learning, as I've just pointed out. There's also something we're introducing, which is incredibly exciting, called the Lifelong Learning Entitlement. And if I could just explain to your listeners very briefly what that means, it means that every adult will be able to borrow up to £37,000 to spend over their adult lifetime on adult learning. And that means they will be able to do short courses or longer courses if they want, but start them at a time they want to start them, rather than having the four fixed entry points that you have. That loan, by the way, you don't pay back more than you borrowed, except in real terms. So, for example, let's say you might have a single parent who hasn't got a lot of time because they might be looking after their child, might be doing a part-time job. But whereas now they may have to think, well, I've got to go to university, I can't do that. I might have the option of open university, which is wonderful, but that's one option. Now, let's say they want to be a social worker. They might say, I want to do a short course on child psychology and I want to start it in January at your college, for example, City College.
Yeah.
And they may do that for a few months. That might be enough. But then they may say, well, actually, I've really enjoyed that, or I want to carry on. And so I'm going to go to Exeter University and do a course of adult psychology for a few months and, you know, use up my £37,000. I'm just giving a very metaphorical example here. So in essence, learning will be a train journey. Rather than just having a destination you get to, you'll be able to get on and off at different stations on the way and build up credits.
Yeah.
And FE colleges will be able to offer this, which is really exciting. And I think it will be revolutionary because it will change the way people think about adult learning. It may mean also that people say, well, I don't need to go to university for 3 years, although, of course, many will still choose that option. So the Lifelong Learning Entitlement, which is a bill I brought through last year over 6 months in the House of Commons, once it comes in 2025 onwards, it's going to start with level four and level five and then move to level six and focus on HTQs at the beginning. I think it will be revolutionary.
Fantastic. Thank you.
Okay.
And I can't let you go, Robert, without asking you the question about inspiring the next generation of political leaders. So given your extensive experience in politics and dedication to skills development, how would you inspire the next generation of political leaders?
Well, I was a very strange child because I decided to be an MP when I was 10 years old. And the reason was because an MP came to my school and said the Houses of Parliament had 1,000 rooms, and I demanded to see every single room. I was taken to the House of Commons. I wasn't shown 1,000 rooms, but I just thought it was the most incredible place on earth, and I decided to do it. There was another reason for public services because of what happened to me with my legs and Great Ormond Street Hospital. I wanted to do public service. And I know people have a view about MPs, but the fact is, if you are an MP, you have to serve your constituency and look after your constituency, whether it's supporting skills and apprenticeships or infrastructure or making the case for Harlow in Parliament or whatever it might be. And I felt it's a way of giving something back. And I've done it for a very long time now. I was elected in 2010, but I'd fought two elections before that. So I was a parliamentary candidate since the end of 1999. So it's been a long, long time. So it's been a privilege to do it, but it's an inspirational profession. It has its downsides, of course, and you read a lot about that in the media, but you have a privilege of representing your community in Parliament. You have a privilege in standing up for the things you believe in. Like, as I say, I've made my life's work in Parliament, apprenticeships and skills, and there can't be many professions that allow you to do that.
Robert, I'm really grateful for your time today and talking about something that we're really passionate about, skills, apprenticeships and higher education. Thank you so much.
Thank you, and well done to you all for being such an example of a wonderful and brilliant college.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you very much.
Skillfully Speaking is supported by Babcock International. Visit babcockinternational.com. Presented by Jackie Grubb. Produced by Paul Philpott. Production support by Lisa Hartwell. Edited and mixed by Martin Burgess Moon. Video content by Mark Stevenson. Coordinated by Louise Greenleaf. Produced by Fresh Air Studios. Copyright City College Plymouth. All rights reserved.